You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to a special edition of the EU Startups Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Senna-Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. Last week, we were invited to Paris to Leonard's launch day, where they were introducing their new 2026 cohort of 42 different startups and initiatives spread across construction, energy, mobility, and real estate. These were chosen by a group of investors and sector experts. They all address challenges such as network resilience, infrastructure flexibility, and even say on-site safety. They've been doing this since 2017 and have supported now 215 different innovative initiatives with a strong emphasis on environmental impact, AI, and industrial innovation. The cohort spans Leonard's four programs. That's Seed, Catalyst, Intrapreneurs, and the AI Track. Now, we specifically spoke to startups from the Catalyst program. This includes 9 scale-ready solutions. The Seed program also has 9, but more early-stage startups. Intrapreneurs is made up of 11 Vinci employee-led projects, and the AI Track is 13 internal AI initiatives. These projects receive between 6 to 12 months of tailored specific support that includes funding, expert guidance, and access to Vinci's operational network, helping bring these new technologies to light. Now, we were able to interview 5 of these startups, and it was quite the honor. And we're going to be releasing the first episode today and the next 4 across the week. So that's 1 episode per each day of the week, 5 in total. So we hope you're ready for that. But before the first interview, here's our quick message from our sponsor, Vent.
You're a startup founder. Finding product market fit is probably your number one priority, but to land bigger customers, you also need security compliance. And obtaining your SOC 2 or ISO 27001 certification can open those big doors, but they take time and energy, pulling you away from building and shipping. That's where Vonta comes in. Vonta is the all-in-one compliance solution, helping startups like yours get audit ready and build a strong security foundation quickly and painlessly. How? Vonta automates the manual security tasks that slow you down, helping you streamline your audit. And the platform connects you with trusted VCSOs to build your program, auditors to get you through audits quickly, and a marketplace for essentials like pen testing. So whether you're closing your first deal or gearing up for growth, Vonta makes compliance easy. Join over 8,000 companies, including many Y Combinator and Techstar startups, who trust Vonta. Simplify compliance and get $1,000 off at vonta.com/EU startups. That's vanta.com/EU startups.
I'm now joined by Ryan, the CEO of Gravis Robotics. Gravis Robotics is a company that, in their own words, turns heavy machinery into robots.
Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. So I was hoping, Ryan, that we could begin just with you giving me and the audience a quick summary of what Gravis Robotics does.
Yeah, so I mean, you said it right. So we essentially turn heavy hydraulic equipment, things like excavators and wheel loaders, the things that are moving earth on a variety of construction sites, into robotic pieces of machinery, right? So this is putting things like cameras and LIDARs and compute onto these machines, which lets us control them using essentially AI-based control to get earth moving done more efficiently.
Okay. Well, I guess my first question, and it always is with any interview that I do, is the very beginning of the idea. What convinced you, what convinced anybody involved with your company at the beginning that automation was necessary in heavy machinery, that was even possible to apply in a realistic way?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. I think, you know, one is the necessity. I think if you look broadly at the industry, what kind of affects earth moving affects a lot of the industry, challenges of labor shortages, challenges of stagnating productivity. And there's, you know, very clearly a mandate to try to drive that productivity up through the kind of increased adoption of technology. Where particularly we fit in is coming out of an academic lab at ETH Zurich that was focused on AI-based control for robotics. So members of our founding team won the DARPA Subterranean Challenge, getting quadrupeds to essentially explore tunnels. This is a really, really hard problem for navigation, for locomotion, for control. And one of the things that we pioneered was using reinforcement learning to essentially teach these robots how to be controlled and how to be very stable and agile in these environments. And the way that we kind of formed the company was actually taking that brain of a legged robot and moving it first to a very large legged excavator. There's a Swiss company called Menzimuk, which makes spider excavators, essentially look like a giant quadruped with wheels on the end of its legs. Mm. And then from there, we took that technology and we started using it for different kinds of construction applications, everything varying from stone construction. This was my PhD. We built a wall with 1,000 one-ton boulders. It's in the Guinness World Records now as the largest wall built by a robot. But using it for earth moving, using it for forestry, using it for teleoperation, remote control, and really seeing the kind of the power that things like LiDAR mapping and intelligent control can bring to the construction industry. So we formed the spinoff, which was able to kind of start generalizing that across a variety of machines. When you talk about, you know, that's kind of what got us here, but then what made it possible was a combination of factors. So one is that AI-based kind of control. There's something that is a new technology that didn't exist a decade ago. The other is that these hydraulic machines are starting to migrate as of about 5 years ago to drive-by-wire-based control. So conventionally on a machine, you move a joystick, it physically opens a hydraulic valve. Mm-hmm. On a lot of the newer machines, you move a joystick and it sends an electronic signal to then operate that machine. So that reduces the complexity of converting that machine to kind of computer-based control because there's already a kind of digital signal driving that. On the other hand, we also see because of the increase in kind of ADAS and self-driving systems in the automotive industry, we're starting to get a big cost drop in things like LiDAR sensing, things like automotive cameras, and kind of quality GPU-based edge computing. And so all of those things now start to combine to give us a reasonable price point, a reasonable amount of complexity, and a level of kind of, let's say, intelligence in the system that lets us work in the kind of complex environments of construction sites.
Well, you've led to my next question perfectly just with that last bit. So you've talked about kind of your academic background, right? And as I understand, that's a controlled environment, right? So what are the challenges in applying that to a site as unpredictable as a construction site?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of that academic background was specifically in navigating in uncontrolled environments, right? Mm. So we're of course, in academia, you have a certain amount of bubble of, you know, you can control the problem. And in a construction site, I think that there's always more unknowns than knowns. Mm. And I think a lot of robotic companies struggle because they always try to solve every edge case to get a system out into the world, right? So if you think you really have to 100% replace the human that's doing that job, there's many, many more edge cases than there are kind of like simple cases in construction. And so what we've essentially engineered is a system that makes it very, very easy for an operator to kind of jump in and take over control. And not only to take control, but to actually take control in a, let's say, superhuman way, because we take all of the robotic intelligence, so all of the 3D scanning, the localization that that system has that tells it exactly where it needs to dig, we convey that to an operator. So that operator sees immediately on a screen, hey, that area is a bit too high. I can go and dig there. And so we actually have a foundational layer of product, which we call augmented machine guidance, which is just there to support operators. Mm-hmm. So if you want to gradually bring autonomy into the environment, you can start with that layer. And then you can essentially turn on cruise control by selecting an area, press play, and having that machine go there and dig. And so it lets operators kind of gradually step into a site that's fully autonomous. In simpler applications, you can just go let that machine run autonomously and you're working, you know, 100% of the time versus, let's say, in other jobs, you might be working 5% of the time. And it's our goal as a kind of product-focused company to bring out something that works in both of those scenarios, that's always bringing value to the customer, whether it's a really, really hard site with, you know, 95% edge cases or a really controlled environment where you have, you know, very, very high level of autonomy.
Mm. We've spoken about easing the load, right, the workload of a construction site. But I was wondering if there was an example you could give me about how it could improve safety, because I would imagine that's another angle to this. And I think it's a realistic application that highlights the value of what you're offering.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that, you know, we always talk about around an excavator is it's a machine that is really driving productivity for the whole site. And because of that, there's a lot of people who are working around and relying on that machine. So you have a benchman who's going there and checking grade, and they're oftentimes within striking distance of a bucket. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have trucks that are being loaded with operators sitting in those vehicles. So if you can make that excavator safer, reduce the reliance on people needing to check because you've got embedded kind of, you know, good geospatial reasoning inside the system, then that all of a sudden takes that person out of harm's way outside of the machine. So what we're really focused on is taking that operator inside the machine, letting them drive more machines, which in a way is reducing the number of operators that you need to get the work done. What we really see is actually that because of the shortage of operators, we want those operators who are there to be able to drive more machines. Mm-hmm. But then it's about increasing the safety of everyone who would conventionally be around and outside the machine. There are cases where being in the machine is also dangerous. So we have cases where, for example, the Swiss military has used this for things like ammunition cleanup or going into an area where there's been a landslide where you haven't yet been able to understand, is that terrain stable? And that might prevent a piece of infrastructure, critical infrastructure, from being repaired for weeks while that analysis is done. But with autonomy and with remote control, you can send a machine in, you know, immediately to be able to start work.
Well, I want to hear about how the decision making of, because in essence, you know, you are a robotics company, but you don't make a robot. You retrofit existing machinery. So what was that decision like? Why did you go that route instead of, say, develop your own?
I think if you start looking at the world of physical AI and you see there's a lot of excitement around kind of new kinds of robots coming to the world, you know, humanoids, for example, a lot of energy around how, all the different things that these machines can do. If you look at the environment as kind of, you know, what are the robotic actuators that are out there in the world today that we could put smarter and smarter and smarter brains on, right? You've got millions of pieces of construction machinery that are essentially like a super productive robot that's just waiting for a software upgrade. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're looking at bringing kind of AI into the physical world as quickly as possible. Why kind of build a new kind of physical model from scratch? Why not use the things that are already there where we can upgrade those existing machines and essentially build that capability over time onto all new machines by better and better embedding of our hardware? So I think that's one of the core reasons. The other reason is that the construction market is really fragmented in terms of equipment. So you have a lot of players that are less than 5% market share. And part of the reason that happens is that what's really important in the industry is service and support. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a service center that's really responsive. It's going to go out there, that's going to repair a machine, that's going to maintain and manage that system. And as a small startup, building out that network that's going out and, let's say, repairing engines and replacing fuel filters isn't something that we want to focus on, right? So we want to actually lean on those existing networks to make sure that when a machine breaks down, if it's something that has nothing to do with that intelligent system, someone else is going to be managing and supporting that.
I imagine there's also a cost-effective side to this, because if you're talking to a potential client, it's not buy this whole new machine. It's we're already using the tools you have, just perfecting them.
Exactly.
Okay. You've mentioned AI a little bit, and that's just kind of the, you know, it's the name of the day, really. It's and not just for you, not just for construction, basically all companies, maybe 80 to 90% of all companies we cover have some kind of AI background to it. So I just want to hear your perspective on the context that you work in terms of how AI has progressed since you've been around, if Gravis Robotics could have existed before this AI boom that we're living in?
Certainly it could not have. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when you look at what an excavator does, there's a lot of high-level decision-making, but there's also a lot of low-level control that machine needs to do to be able to kind of move its bucket through the ground. And even something as simple as that, when you really start looking at that system, if you compare it to, let's say, a quadruped robot, which has very kind of, you know, repeatable motors that you kind of understand the torques and physical properties of, on a construction machine, you've got very complicated hydraulic system that has all kinds of delays. There are coupling effects. You have one big pump. If you move one joint versus another joint at the same time, you'll get a different behavior. If you're kind of hitting something under the ground, you start hitting torque limits, but those are very variable based on all kinds of conditions, the slop in the cylinders, the temperature. And so these are all factors that become very, very hard to model with, let's say, like classical numerical control, to just be able to say, let's solve a problem, move this thing here, and it's going to do what we expect. But then beyond the complexity of the, let's say, the robot or the excavator itself, you have complexity of the environment. So the ground is rocky, the ground is sandy, the ground is frozen. And the way that you move through that material is very, very different depending on kind of the composition of that ground. And so, you know, past maybe classical approaches could do something like saying, I'm going to say this ground is hard, always take shallow scraping passes. But in reality, that ground can change in a moment. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be constantly analyzing what's going on. And that's where our reinforcement learning-based control essentially goes into the very, very low level of that machine. It's looking at things like pressures in the hydraulic system, and it's really understanding those soil dynamics, and it's being rewarded when it fills that bucket effectively. So it's really feeling its way through the ground. And what we're doing as a company using AI is really focused on something closer to dexterous manipulation. If you kind of think about the problem landscape of robotics, it's how do we get that bucket to move very gracefully through the ground and come up full. And if you're not from the industry and you think about, you know, just this challenge of, is the bucket full? That's what drives productivity. Mm-hmm. If you're able to go in and fill that bucket effectively and turn and dump it with a very repetitive cycle, if you have a bucket that has, let's say, 10% fill rate, you're going to take 10 times as long to do the job as someone who can effectively and efficiently fill that.
Okay. Well, when we're on the topic of automation, I think naturally you have to come to the, I guess, most difficult question, which is really the fear of it replacing human operators. And what is your response to that? Because I can understand, you know, somebody who's leading a construction site says, great, this sounds so good to me. I can automate this. I can make it safer for my workers. I can make it so they can focus on other tasks. But what do you say to a construction worker who says, well, that's my job. Will this replace me?
I think that, you know, what we really see with the labor shortages in the industry is that, you know, we're not going to replace operators' jobs. What we're going to do is get those operators to drive first one machine more efficiently, and then two, and then three, and then four. And it's really about getting those repetitive tasks kind of handled autonomously. But there's going to be a lot of edge cases. You think about the level of human conversation that happens in a construction site. You know, I think one example that I bring up here is that even human operators today are not kind of, let's say, fully autonomous in that they can work entirely alone. Like no one on a construction site works as an island. They need to communicate. They need to get approval. You hit something under the ground, you might need to change the plans. You might need to talk to the foreman. You might need to talk to another trade and align what's going on. So all of those decisions happen as a kind of collective kind of community. Mm. And you're not just going to put one robot in there and all of a sudden have it able to do everything.
Sure.
So, you know, what we really see is that human factor, what operators do is facilitate that communication. And that's going to be there for a long time, that need to communicate with other people around the site to manage those complex logistics. And I think we're very far from a site where every one of those operations, including external material delivery and whatnot, is done fully autonomously without humans in the loop. So we see that having humans there to orchestrate and communicate between these systems is a really critical part of the future, but that our system specifically is there to take, you know, that full spectrum of application from full autonomy to just augmentation of manual work. And that's where we see, you know, we can take a novice operator who's never touched a machine and get them digging with the performance at or beyond that of an average operator for repetitive tasks. But then what we want to do is take that veteran operator who's, you know, top of the rankings in terms of speed and productivity and get them managing five machines, right? So it's really about taking a novice and letting them get quickly to an average kind of operator competence and taking that expert and making them essentially superhuman.
How do you see that technology affecting the workforce in the future? You know, and of course, we're talking very expansive if we were to get to that level, but how do you see it changing the way construction sites work?
I think the hope is that it's a magnet for the workforce of the future, right? I think what we're seeing right now is really hard to get the next generation into this industry. You wake up early in the morning, it's freezing cold, you go to the bathroom in a porta potty. It's not the most elegant thing, but those who have worked in it see it's incredibly rewarding, right? And once you get someone who can say, well, I built that, right? I oversaw that process. I was able to kind of make sure those machines were doing what they needed to do. It's a magical experience, right? And I'll say anyone who's used our system, you tap on a tablet, you press play, and, you know, 40 tons of iron drives across a field and starts digging a hole. It feels super powerful. And that's where we see, let's get that next generation who's comfortable using an iPad, who's comfortable doing things on a computer, and who's comfortable using AI, and have them just come into the industry by the dozen because they're so excited about what this technology can do for kind of their ability to impact the world in a positive way.
Can you give me a bit of color on that? Because you've mentioned, you know, the awe of somebody seeing that. Is there an example you can think of somebody on a site who's just blown back by the technology you're presenting?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of my favorite things in my job, right, is seeing the first reaction that people have to this technology. And I think that that's something where, you know, we always had, when we started the company, this concern, you know, maybe people will be worried about their jobs being taken. And I think as soon as you really start interacting with this technology, it's more that feeling of empowerment. You see, like, wow, it's so simple to use. It's really, I mean, some of my favorite examples are when the weather is horrible, right? When it's snowing or sleeting outside, and it's so uncomfortable that you don't even want to trudge through the mud to get to the machine. Mm-hmm. And you sit in a warm container, you pull up a tablet, you draw out the area you want to dig, and you press run, and then this machine goes and does it. And it really, you know, keeps you in that kind of, you can just keep talking to your colleagues, you can keep kind of going through the plans for the day. And that's something that we see as really magical, and I think for everyone feels like a very engaging and new way of working, where they still, I think the great thing about technology, they can still take that tablet, jump back in the machine and dock it in and use it the same way they did yesterday, or, you know, with additional augmentation. But it's something that kind of opens up new opportunities in a way that I think creates a lot of excitement for the people who use our system.
Do you think, because it makes me think of, because you're talking about, you know, I'm sitting in a warm place, is there a remote work application to this, or do you strongly feel this should be an on-site use of technology?
So, you know, I think for us, we think of the way we bring autonomy kind of to our North Star, right? What we want to get to is the entire site being heavily autonomous, having a fleet of machines where you're moving a mountain essentially at the press of a button. And to get there, what that really means is, like, you need someone who's not inside every machine, so they need to be a bit far away, and you need to have those machines highly autonomous. Mm-hmm. Where I think some companies have focused is, let's get people out of the machines first. Let's get people far away. So you focus on remote control as your first product. Once people are comfortable being very far away, you start moving them kind of on the axis of autonomy to start getting, you know, more and more and more autonomy. What our product strategy is, it's actually much more about first bring in those layers of autonomy with a flexible product that you can use in the cabin. You can use on site in a container. And that lets people get more productive. At the same time, the cool thing about our product architecture is you can use it wherever you want, but we're really prioritizing making sure that customers increase productivity before getting far away. Because that's the other downside of remote control, is that oftentimes you're a little bit less effective, right? There's a little bit more latency in the system. There's a little bit less awareness. And so when you just take someone with the remote and you don't augment them in any way, you start seeing a loss in productivity. And that's the last thing the industry needs, right? It's a dip in productivity to say, oh, well, in the future, this is going to get better. What we're trying to do is essentially increase productivity, get that going inside the machine. Then once you're able to get very, very effective using autonomy and augmentation in the machine, you might be even faster when you go remote than when you were sitting in the machine without our product. And that's exactly where we want to be, essentially building out that productive foundation, which also lets us get kind of exposure to a lot of different kinds of jobs and operations, lets us build data to be able to make our system better, and really grow that product over time to be able to handle more and more and more tasks.
Okay, so you're talking about where you want the company to be, how you want it to be perceived. What would you say is a common misconception when you're talking to clients, or talking to somebody who's thinking about applying your technology? What's a misconception about what you do and maybe how you do it?
I think, you know, one of the first things, and it took us a little while to realize this as well, is that the first thing that comes up is that the value of an autonomous system is in labor reduction, that the kind of financial ROI comes from that. And I think if you look at any robot that's in the construction industry, I've yet to see one that is like fully lights out, right? Where you don't have an operator with a tablet who's managing the system. And so in general, it's like, you know, if you're taking away an operator and you're putting back a PhD in robotics, that's not really a great labor model. What we see instead with heavy equipment is that the cost of those machines, the cost to rent the machine, the cost for the fuel, the cost of the truck that's parked waiting to be loaded, the cost of that fuel, the cost of the operator sitting in the truck, the cost of the benchman, the cost of the foreman that's telling the operator what to do, those things get so much more expensive if you drop productivity. So, but they get a lot cheaper if you can increase productivity. So our goal as a company is to focus not on the ROI of reducing labor, but on the ROI of making these machines more productive, of actually making them dig faster when you're in autonomous mode and making that operator dig faster when they're using augmentation.
Okay. Well, for the last question here, because we're nearing our limit, but I think it's an interesting one. In November of last year, when we covered this funding round to you startups, you raised $19 million. Now, you did that in a market where, as far as we can see, most contact funding favors software, really, over hardware. How did you convince investors to bet on something that really might be going a bit against the current?
Well, I mean, in a way, we need hardware to enable our software, right? Mm-hmm. We're very much a software play. As we move into the future, we'll be running software on machines coming out of the factory that are essentially able to, you know, have autonomous systems from the day you get the machine. But at the same time, I think what investors are seeing is this massive opportunity in construction. There's not a lot of investment that's happened in the past, but the opportunity space, the percentage of the GDP, the fact that, you know, there are about 10 billion operating hours being conducted on these machines every year. The opportunity space is very, very big, and the potential impact is huge, right? And the urgency is critical. So I think what investors are seeing is that, you know, we're at the right time where there's a critical need in the industry. And at the same time, we're at the right time where there's a lot of new competence with AI around kind of embodied and physical AI that we can start leveraging to actually make these industries be able to have the kind of productivity increases that we've seen, for example, in manufacturing. So I think it's really a recognition that the next frontier in AI is the physical world. It's gathering data, it's enacting things on the world, it's changing the environment, and construction is a place where, you know, there's a massive opportunity to do that. And as I said before, you know, it's the only place where you have millions of robots, millions of potential robots already out there working today, just essentially waiting for a bit of better software.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thank you much. Cheers.
Thanks.